literally have no idea why we conservatives continue to stupidly vote for Republicans. Sam Rojofsky here, Sam Nation. We're coming to you Friday afternoon, actually moving up the podcast a bit, so not on Saturday if you're wondering why we have popped into your iTunes library prematurely. This is it. So Friday afternoon, here we go. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Radio. Look, I'll tell you, this omnibus bill, this spending supplement bill that was just rammed through Congress is exactly why the Republican Party ought to be over. There is, well, okay, let me trace the steps of this. So if this bill did not get signed at midnight, the government would run out of money. And I've mentioned this before. Republicans are absolutely paranoid over government shutdowns. This is like Punxsutawney Phil seeing his shadow. They are so afraid of any type of government shutdown confrontation as the confrontations with the media, because the media portray these government shutdowns as mean, rascally Republicans who are heartlessly shutting down parks and beaches and public services and the like for the dear, loving, wonderful public. And this is how it gets painted in the media. And Republicans hate it. They hate, they are the compassionate conservative. And they constantly try to pander. The pandering, folks, the pandering doesn't work. You and I, we understand this. The reason that we sent Trump to Washington was to be tough, was to take a stand, was to finally draw the line over ridiculous pork spending. See, let me give you an example here. I have a question for you. When it comes to mandates, right, and a mandate would be some sort of issue that has public support, I won't even say public support, that has public votes, requests, public requests behind it. What issue of these two that I'm about to share has a mandate? The border wall or a tunnel to New Jersey? Well, let me just really quickly here. Best as I can tell, about half the country voted for Trump. Tell me how much of the country voted for Chuck Schumer and his damn tunnel. I know, this matters because it happens over and over again, and I think it foreshadows an incredible political shift that will happen in our lifetimes. I think that as a brand, if you're in a business, in a business world, in a commercial setting, a brand has to have some identity. It has to have some purpose. It has to have appeal that is distinct from other brands, other products out there competing in the same space. You understand this, right? Well, please tell me what the difference is between the Republican brand and the Democratic brand. What's the difference between Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell? Because, yes, I understand it principally, there are some finer points where the two disagree. But when it comes to spending, they both spend money like drunken whores. And that's our money. How much? Look at your paycheck. It's Friday today. Did you get a paycheck? Look at it. Those little deductions, right? There's a big number at the top. And then because, you know, maybe you live in California and you get more deductions than most, you look at your check. And all of those subtractions in there, that's real money that you worked for, that you earned, that you negotiated painstakingly in your salary, in your compensation package. And that money now is going poof out to the government. And the government turns around and spends it so fantastically irresponsibly that it renders every bit of your financial prudence completely irrelevant. So what's in this bill? Free everything. My God, I don't even... It's 220 pages. They're given... congressmen were given very little time to read it. This is by design, by the way. 2,200 pages. What did I say? Well, it's 2,200 pages. 2,200 pages. A lot of paper. And they were given hours to read it. It was dropped on them at midnight, East Coast time. So you figure, you know, there are some people that actually try to read it. Rand Paul spent, spent hours reading it and only got through 600 pages. By the way, this I'm not. This stuff is not exactly a thrilling read. There is stuff in this bill that members of Congress who are voting on it have no idea about. And the reason they're voting on it, by the way, just so you understand, is everybody has their pet issue, their pet piece of pork. In the bill, and they flip to whatever relevant pages. Oh, is my little goodie bag in here? And they, you know, and they flip through the paper, and yep, there it is. There's my little nugget. So when we think about what's going to happen in 2018, right? We've got midterms coming up. I need to know. I need to understand this. How in H. Is the Republican Party expecting to be able to win? How is the Republican brand distinct from the Democratic brand? Because we understand that Democrats spend money like crazy. We understand that Democrats want every social project under the sun. And we get all of that. It's why we vote Republican, even if maybe we're not necessarily with the Republican Party on every social issue. We understand that the winning position in America, as I understand it, and I, by the way, folks, you know, I've got my thumb on the pulse of culture and politics. And so I'm telling you the position that works right now in this country, that where I think the majority of us are, is socially leaning liberal and fiscally leaning conservative. And fiscally leaning conservative means you don't spend money you don't have. It means you maybe take a stance back on some of these wild spending bills. Certainly no one likes pork. Pork, and this is the expression for these pet projects that congressmen put in and senators put in for their local districts. Nobody likes that. These are the bridges to nowhere, right? These are spending projects intended to benefit a few people in a home district, so that the incumbent congressman or senator can be reelected. It's virtually a form of bribery and vote influencing. So I'm angry, and Trump with his little charade here is I might just veto it. Now, my read on this, by the way, is that it's not a stunt. My read on it is that he was torn, and damn right he should have been torn. But I think what ultimately happened is, and I heard that this morning, I was getting ready and I saw that there was some scuttlebutt that Mattis, General Mattis, as soon as Trump tweeted out that he might be vetoing the bill, Mattis panicked because there's north of $80 billion in this bill for the military. And if you're General Mattis, you need that cash. And he must have really put the screws to Trump, and Trump gave in. But what I don't understand is where are the Republicans? Where is their spine when it comes to the Democrats and standing up to the Democrats? And the answer is there are enough Republicans in Congress who are Democrats in Republicans' clothes. And they are as socially liberal and as spendy with our money as members across the aisle. Now, if you don't believe me, Rand Paul, who is a spending hawk and a true conservative in the Senate, had this to say about the GOP brand. And listen to this. He's absolutely dead right here. This is him on Tucker Carlson yesterday talking about the omnibus.
You know, I'm kind of old school. I think you ought to read the bills, you know, before we vote on them. This is a 2,200-page bill. We got it last night at midnight. I've been working all day diligently through the bill, and I'm up to page 600. But, you know, I've still got quite a bit of ways to go to read the bill. As far as the content of the bill, this could have been written by President Obama and liberal Democrats. I think this is why people are so upset with politics, because when the Republicans are out of power, when they're in the minority, they are the conservative party. But then when they get in the majority, there is no conservative party.
Yeah, we are, guys, we are like Charlie Brown and the Republican Party, the RNC, and certainly the congressional Republicans, are like Lucy with the football. And we get so, because the football that they put in front of us every time there's an election, every time that, you get the letters, they send out the letters. So we desperately need money. We're fighting Barack Obama's policy. You get the letter. And they are so conservative. They're only conservative. I actually disagree with Rand Paul a little bit. Not just when they're in the minority, they're also very conservative every time an election comes around. And that's part of the reason why everyone wanted to ram this bill through, because they want this bill done and over and history way in advance of the election. So there's a political component to this that you have to understand. There's a timing component. This bill, if this thing dragged on for the Republicans, it would literally be an enormous political albatross for them. Not for the Democrats. For the Democrats, it's a win. Pelosi and Schumer are celebrating. They got everything they wanted. The only thing they had to give up on was a little bit of defense spending. Trump only got $1.8 billion for the wall. Planned Parenthood gets $500 million. This is insanity. And it's not, by the way, folks, this is not an abortion issue. This is just, what is our government spending money on? I'm just, call me old fashioned. I think it should be sticking to the basics, especially when we're running a deficit. So Rand Paul, continuing on Tucker Carlson, he really nails it here, because he gets to the issue of why Republicans cave to Democrats. And it's what I've always been saying. There's a similitude between the two, actually, when it comes to their fundamental principles. Listen to this.
The unholy alliance between Republicans and Democrats is this. Republicans are not fiscally conservative on the military. They want unlimited spending on the military.
Right.
Democrats say, we'll give it to you. We're not really opposed to it. We'll give you the military spending if you give us the domestic spending. So really the unholy alliance, the unholy compromise has been going on for decades, is we really actually have too much compromise in Washington.
Of
They're
course.
Always compromising to raise spending and increase the debt.
They're always compromising to increase spending and raise the debt. And he is right. And I promise you that there is, again, it's because I think I have an understanding for what is happening out there in the country and what the general mood of real Americans is. See, real Americans, I'm just saying the people that don't get all the attention on TV. So the guy that goes to work, the gal that goes to work, the parents, the grandparents, the single guy, the single gal, at the end of the day, the working public, us, right? What do we want? And I'm just going to say this. We want a government that is forced to at least abide by some, fiscal parameters that constrains us in our daily lives. Why should our government get to max out the credit cards all the time only to apply for a bigger, higher spending limit when they run out of room? We don't operate that way. We can't operate that way. It's impossible for us to operate this way. And none of this, by the way, none of the spending that I see here, these tunnels and this nonsense and Planned Parenthood, I don't see anything in here that really will fundamentally help our economy. Because ultimately, this type of debt and this just increases the deficit tremendously, right? It's a $1.3 trillion spending bill. All of this debt becomes a drag coefficient on our economy moving forward, because we're trying to move our country ahead, and we're lugging this giant boulder on our back. So it's absolutely, look, the Democrats, what they did is they held the military spending hostage. They knew that we needed it, and they held it hostage. And my answer to this is, yeah, so what? Of course that's what they're going to do. That is the tried playbook of the Democratic Party. This is the expectation is that that's going to happen. Why be conciliatory now? My favorite pronouncement from Trump today, and yes, if you can tell from my voice, I'm unhappy, is that he is unhappy about this bill and never again. Did you hear that? He's never, ever going to sign a bill like this again. Listen to what he's saying on this.
As a matter of national security, I've signed this omnibus budget bill. There are a lot of things that I'm unhappy about. There are a lot of things that we shouldn't have had in this bill, but we were, in a sense, forced, if we want to build our military, we were forced to have. But I say to Congress, I will never sign another bill like this again. I'm not going to do it again. Nobody read it. It's only hours old. Some people don't even know what it is. $1.3 trillion. It's the second largest ever. But in this case, it became so big because we need to take care of our military. And because the Democrats, who don't believe in that, added things that they wanted in order to get their votes.
Well, that's all fine and dandy. But last time I checked, the reason that Trump was sent to Washington was because people wanted someone there who was going to be a big enough of an A-money-money hole to finally say no to this. Well, anyway, those are my thoughts, and I'm just very disappointed about how this has developed. We'll talk about Bolton, because it's not all bad news out of Washington this week, but I will get into that here after the break. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Radio, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
So the Bolton story, right? John Bolton set to replace McMaster as the national security advisor. The story on Bolton begins a while back. I'm not going to do the full rewind on this. The Bolton and Trump have been very close for a while. And do you remember when I prognosticated here on the program at the beginning of sort of during the transition, I was my strongly held belief that Bolton would be Secretary of State. And this wasn't just based on me reading tea leaves and putting licking my thumb and putting it up in the air and getting a sense of where the wind was coming from. I did believe strongly, do still believe, that the men are close and ideologically very much aligned. Don't make much of Bolton's support for the Iraq war and the Iraqi invasion, that he is a hawk and he understands profoundly the dangers raised by totalitarian regimes. And he is somebody that understands that when you negotiate with people like Iran, the Ayatollahs and mullahs in Iran and Kim Jong-un and his band of banditos, Trump, I mean, Bolton's a guy that understands that everything that comes out of these people's mouths are lies. So the best way I can describe Bolton to you, take John Kerry and then just put John Kerry in the sinkerator and flush him down the drain and just start over completely. And that's John Bolton. But I always suspected that Bolton would have a place in the Trump administration, so I'm happy it's happening. But let's just rewind the clock to earlier in the week, and this was on the 21st. You remember this bit of news about Trump getting a memo on his desk ahead of his phone call with Vladimir Putin. So Trump had a phone call with Putin, and if you remember, Putin had just won his big election, where he came in, 74%, 75% of the vote. I mean, just let me tell you, Putin's a very popular guy in Russia. So, well, and he had Facebook helping him, obviously. It was all those bots. I think Putin was interfering in his own election. I think that's what was going on. But at any rate, his the wonks, right? The national security team. And you got to understand who these people are. It's not just McMaster. There's an entire team of Georgetown educated policy wonks, people who enjoy visiting Greece and sitting in a cafe in Athens, sipping one of those thick coffees with a pinky raised in the air. These are the kind of people that love the world. They're citizens of the world. And then they get a gig in government and they just sort of go there to die. And these are the people that a guy like McMaster taps, and they come in and their judgment is absolutely nuts, right? Their judgment is colored by a willful ignorance to how brutal the world really is. That's, I think, the most important thing to say about it. So it's this cabal of useless government BSers that put on Trump's desk a little memo that read, in part, his cheat sheet, right, for the phone call. Do not congratulate Putin on winning the election. Why? I have that question. By the way, you know why? Well, the reason they didn't want to put, they said don't, because of he stole the election, and you can't congratulate somebody on stealing an election. It's not done. It's uncouth. And Trump did what Trump does, and he took that recommendation and he blew it off. And I think it was, who cares? Obama did the same exact thing last time there was an election in Russia. Putin didn't steal the election this time and not before. OK, if Putin stole the election this week, he stole it 5 years ago. Fair enough. Can we at least agree on that? So when Barack Obama disregarded that same wonk suggestion that he not, praise or congratulate Putin on winning the election, nobody said anything. But of course, it's Trump. And the whole world went crazy. So when we come back, there's a reason this all ties together. And there's a reason why this particular event ushered in this change. Because it was literally 48 hours later that suddenly we were talking about McMaster getting replaced, even though it was in the works. I get it. But there was no clear date of departure. And I'm telling you, it was this leaked memo and ridicule of Trump for not listening to his little wonk team. I'll explain it all. Don't worry. I'm here for you. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Radio, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Radio. Here we are dissecting the news of the day. And I'm just a quick reminder here. If you're surprised that this podcast has suddenly emerged in your iTunes Dropbox playlist, don't be alarmed. We're here on Friday, not Saturday. So this week in review is coming to you 24 hours early. I hope you don't mind. I know I don't. It'll be nice to enjoy. We may actually continue doing it around this time. So, well, let me know what you guys think. Email me, sam@samnation.com. You know the email, right? I still get emails, and I respond to them as needed, and do enjoy hearing from you. And I'm so grateful for all of you who have followed the show as we've left KABC and are right now enjoying our wilderness years. Here on the I was gonna call it the dark web, but then I'm worried that's a joke. No, we're very much in the legitimate internet field. And no, you cannot buy Bitcoin on the Sam Nation website. I'm disappointed, but when we do open our e-store, maybe we'll do that. Robbie, you can look into that. So, understanding why McMaster got replaced this week with John Bolton. Excuse me. Sorry. I've got too many things going. I've got so many news stories here that I feel like Madman Wurlitzer here in front of his organ. You know, I'm just too much going on. Pardon me. So I'm bringing all this up because you remember that memo to Putin that we were just talking about? The materials read, literally the memo that Trump was given by his national security team said, do not congratulate. And Trump did it anyway. And then it leaked. And the reason this news story was so, I would say important is because that memo was touched by so few people. The final version of that memo is approved by McMaster himself. And I believe that the only logical conclusion from this is that McMaster himself or one of his deputies with McMaster's tacit approval allowed for this embarrassing detail to leak to the media. And why? Why would McMaster, serving Trump in the employ of the president of the United States, why would he leak out that they said in there, don't congratulate Putin, and Trump did it anyway? He doesn't even know how to read, that buffoon. Why do you think they leaked it out? See, the answer to this, the answer, friends, is extremely important to understanding why the change was necessary. I think it's plain as day. You have a national security team that is openly contemptuous of the president. They think they know better. And when the president doesn't follow their instructions, they are going to slap his little hand and tell him, bad Donald. And we're going to embarrass you in the media. Now, think about that for a minute. Is that any way to run a national security apparatus? It's not. It absolutely isn't. And especially, by the way, so many of these people are lifers. So many people of these, there's so many holdovers there from Obama's term. And when I think of disastrous foreign policy, textbook, right? It's Obama. Obama and Carter are literally fighting for key position there. And the only difference, of course, is that Obama had 8 years to screw things up, and Carter, blessedly, only 4. So this is why 2 days later, Trump issued a very kind, congratulatory, thankful message to McMaster, General McMaster, saying, thank you for your service. You'll always be a great friend. And by the way, don't let the door hit you on the way out. And I think this is going to be a critical change. Now, I remember talking to Bolton when we were in Cleveland for the Republican convention. And at the time, I told him, I said, you're my pick for Secretary of State. And he's a charming guy, by the way. He's called this terrible, crazy hawk, you know, but he's a very charming guy. I said, you're my pick for Secretary of State. And in that same sense, I think I'm still right. And I think that if everything goes well here with national security, I believe it will, that will be his next step. So, again, keeping you one step ahead of the news cycle of the day. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, okay. Trump is having some bimbo eruptions. That is a Hillary Clinton term. Stormy Daniels, you've heard of her. She is a, I believe, some sort of adult film star. I by no means am an expert in the subject, but I'm looking at her. And I don't. So I have no, this whole story here is only interesting to the extent that it's not interesting. Well, there's another woman that's coming out this week, gave an interview yesterday, I believe. She's claiming they had a romantic relationship that involved also some physical activities. Do you think anybody is surprised? Question one. See, I don't think anyone is surprised that Trump is a philanderer. And I think the second question that has to be asked is, okay, if no one's surprised, does anybody care? And this is beyond just a conversation of living in a post-Bill Clinton era, because that now is the new way we view these things. Who cares about someone's personal morality? It's irrelevant. We heard our friends on the left tell us that for years with Clinton. He's really good president. That's what matters. You know, he's a good president. Who cares if he's a pig? But the other part of the story is, and I'm just laughing because, you know, nobody voted for Mitt Romney. You know, Trump isn't Mitt Romney. I think the extent to which immorality affects you and affects your brand depends largely on how much you make that part of your brand. I hate to be crass like this. And don't accuse me of being relativist. I'm looking at this strictly from a political sense. I think for a guy like Romney, it would be catastrophic if there were President Romney in office and he's built his brand on being a Mormon and on being a father, a husband, good man, you know, Christian values and the like. People would be appalled if they found out that his life was a lie, that it was all just that he's a hypocrite. But I don't think there's anything, you know, Trump is Trump. I mean, he openly oogles women. And so this is nothing. So part of what intrigues me about all of this is the way that now the Stormy Daniels story and all these, you know, women that are coming forward are being used as possible, I don't know, explanations for why Trump is governing, right? Trump's got his lawyers worried about the Stormy Daniels thing, but he's governing. He's making decisions. For example, one of the decisions we were just talking about, picking Ambassador Bolton to be his new national security advisor, which, of course, is a good move. And everybody's wondering, is the tail wagging the dog? Here is Brian Stelter asking Karen McDougal, on CNN Reliable Sources Thursday about the timing. So have a listen to this.
I did think it was interesting, Aaron Bolton just said minutes ago, he wasn't expecting this announcement today.
Right.
We know he was in the Oval Office, but he wasn't expecting this to come out. I'm not a big fan of the whole argument of Trump always trying to distract us, but there is an interview that's about to air on this network with Karen McDougal, a woman accused that described an alleged affair with him. And I just have to wonder if he's once again making a big announcement to try to take away from an unflattering story.
Right.
Ooh, that's what it is. You're right. He is making a massive shakeup in the West Wing to distract from another woman coming forward to tell her story about an illicit affair that happened, you know, some years in the past. I mean, it could be. But the reality is everything is being viewed through this lens of I don't. If I'm Trump right now, the only issue really is that my wife probably wants to murder me. Right. That's his problem. He's got Melania problems. But in the grand scheme of things, with, you know, Mueller breathing down his neck and a congressional, you know, election coming up here in the midterms, Trump has enough on his plate. I don't think it's a factor. And I really nobody's talking. They all want to talk about Stormy Daniels. But they don't want to talk about, maybe General McMaster and how he was backstabbing Trump his entire time working in the White House. See, it's things like this. It's always how you perceive an event. And journalists ought to present both sides, but they're not. So welcome to the world of CNN. This is why you listen to Sam Nation. We'll be back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Murjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Can I just give one last word on Ambassador John Bolton becoming Trump's national security advisor? Sometimes I judge people based on what other people say about them. And you know this. If you have a friend that you trust and that friend tells you, oh, yeah, Bob over there, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. I've known him for years. He's fantastic. Can also work in the reverse, right? You can have, you've had this happen. You got somebody who you think is a total kook. And that person tells you somebody's awful and terrible. And it almost makes you go, hey, I wonder if there's something to that guy. I wonder if, you know, Jack, oh my God, he is terrible. You wouldn't believe what he did to me, that guy. And you're like, well, the person telling me this is a crackhead, so maybe Jack's okay. Well, speaking of my favorite crackhead at MSNBC, here is Chris Matthews freaking out over John Bolton. I love this. Listen closely.
I don't know whether this is wag the dog. Is this to get away from Stormy Daniels and the whole rest of this hell or what? But to bring in the biggest neocon in the world, the one exact who so many millions of voters voted against in 2016, who voted against stupid wars, and bring in the biggest hawk there's ever been and put him as head of national security is awful. Getting rid of Tillerson, we get rid of him, we get rid of Matt McMaster, and we bring in John Bolton. This is bringing in Tojo. This is unbelievable. I'm sorry.
You know, Tojo, by the way, being the Japanese imperial general who ordered the invasion of Pearl Harbor. All I'm saying, you see my point. If Chris Matthews is ruining the departure of Tillerson and McMaster, it was high time for Tillerson and McMaster to go. This is great. I mean, if these, this is beyond just sort of like an affinity thing. This means to me, because a guy like Matthews is high profile enough to be sitting with these people and mingling with them. I bet part of the reason he's pissed to see Tillerson and McMaster go is because he's losing some sources. I think this really betrays what's been going on. The left has seen these people that have been forced out of the White House as their friends and allies. These people that have been forced out, like Tillerson and like McMaster, have seen themselves arrogantly as the rational adults in the room. And this dynamic, this relationship dynamic between them and the media and Trump has them serving the wrong master. The guy with the mandate is the president. He gets to decide it. Now, look, if I've got Obama in the White House and, you know, I suffered with that for 8 years, as you know well, and guess what? By all means, I would love to see somebody in the Obama administration who's going to put the brakes to it. Of course, that guy's going to be my guy. But here, I don't, you know, giving that example, I did not want Obama to succeed. I wanted him to fail. But I want Trump to succeed because the issues that he ran on, for the most part, are objectives that I want to have reached. And so with that, I see this being an exciting opportunity. Okay, more on gun control. We're going to get to that. Also, a little bit of the Facebook story. We got to talk about that Cambridge Analytica. You know, there's a guy that taught his pug to do a Nazi salute. He's going to jail in Great Britain. Nuts. Nuts stuff. All right. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Back after this short break. Can't stop addicted to the shindig.
Chop, chop, it says I'm going to win big. Choose not. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, as an added spot tonight, I just wanted to let you guys know that we are subjugating our entire show to Sam Nation because apparently he's right and the rest of everyone is wrong.
Sam Wojcicki, Sam Nation. This is the place where past performance is a guarantee of future results. Friday. We're doing this Friday, not Saturday. And I know if this confuses you, don't worry. You just get the podcast a day earlier and that much better. So I am happy to have you here. I want to talk about this Scottish comedian. His name is Mark Meachin. He goes by, we'll call it the stage name, Count Dankula. And so what this guy, this is, who is this guy? He's a YouTube comedian. He's got a YouTube channel. He's got about 130,000 subscribers, which is pretty good. And he has, so he's got a following, and he basically gets his following by doing and saying ridiculous things. Now, in the United States, this story here takes place in Great Britain and in Scotland, so specifically. But in the United States, I don't believe it's an accident that the First Amendment, free speech, came first. Because in the Bill of Rights, issues like being able to speak freely and having our homes and papers and things free from random, you know, government seizures and searches, having a right to a certain process, a due process, and the like. These were all really important things to the folks back in the beginning. And why were they important? Because they'd come from England. They'd come from a place where these rights were not allowed, right? They were not given to them. We as Americans, we suffer from something very interesting, and I call it big country syndrome. And big country syndrome, this is my definition, it's not a real thing, but big country syndrome is we live in a big country. We're virtually an entire, we're basically a continent. We span a continent. And so many Americans very rarely leave the continental United States. And if they leave, they leave the country, they go someplace foreign that is sort of like fantasy land. They go to a resort in Mexico. Or they go someplace in Canada. Or they, you know, perhaps maybe once or twice in their lifetimes will go to Europe. And whatever experience they have in these countries outside is very superficial because they're just there on the ground for a few days as tourists. Once in a while, an American traveling to, let's say, Germany, is very surprised when they are detained at the airport over something that is offensive on their shirt. Perhaps it could be an anti-Israel slogan. Perhaps it could be an anti-Islam slogan. I don't know. There have been examples of this, like this, that have happened over the years. And they'll literally, in Germany, if you land in Frankfurt, you get there at the airport, you're going through customs immigration, and they see something that they don't like, they'll flag you and they can send you home. So, for example, if you have a shirt that denies the Holocaust, you're going home, like right then and there. This is not like seventh grade where they make you turn your shirt inside out and stay for the remaining instruction. Collect your bags right now. Turn around. When's the next flight back to Los Angeles? Sayonara. And that is when Americans, many Americans that I've seen, I've read stories, I've heard these things happen. I've had it happen to a friend actually once. This is when most Americans suddenly realize how exceptional their country is. Because we in this country have a blessed right to say and do, say, stupid things. We can say offensive things. And with very limited exception, the government cannot prevent you from doing so. Now, I don't want to get into a big discussion about free speech and what it entails. The point is, we have exceptional rules here, and it makes us a very special place. And this is why, as Americans, we're looking at this guy, Mark Meachin, in Scotland, and we're going, what the heck? But let me show you. Let me tell you what can happen. So this guy, I don't know. It's okay. For sure, it's offensive. I have a reading of this. Can I tell you what happened? I'm not going to play the clip. But he basically trains his girlfriend's pug named Buddha to give a Nazi salute. And all this dog is doing is raising its paw anytime the words Sieg Heil are said. That's the story. Also, there, the pug also is taught to get excited over a very offensive phrase. Now, my read on this, if I have to give a social criticism of what this was all about, my social critique of it, is that it's offensive. But actually, look, when you look at Hitler's rallies, early 30s in Germany, and you see the hysterical crowds and everybody's doing the Nazi salutes up and down, and they're just gushing. Mass hysteria, guys. If you can teach a pug to give a Nazi salute, a brainless dog, I'm sorry, and I love dogs, don't get me wrong, but I'm telling you, this dog is not giving any thought to it. Do you see the criticism there? Do you see how maybe, just maybe, this comedian is not actually advocating, you know, Nazism, but maybe he's giving a social criticism of people following or falling for, you know, a mass hysteria event? I don't know. I don't know what his purpose was. But it's not the place of the government to figure this out. Now, in Great Britain, boom, that's a hate crime. And he ended up going on trial. He was convicted and he faces up to a year of jail. Here he is. I understand he's speaking with the Scottish accent. I do. I've listened to this clip a few times now. I promise you it's English. Listen closely to what he's saying.
See if it takes me going to jail for a year to show everyone how ridiculous and overreaching hate speech laws are, where a YouTube comedian can go to prison for an entire year. If that's what it would take for everyone in the country to realise, holy these laws need changed. They're overreaching, they're authoritarian, they're clearly being used to control the public discourse.
So I just to put some perspective on this, in England, Great Britain, what do you get for murder? It's like 7 years? 8 years? Murder! Like, you ended somebody's life. That's what I see. I mean, I follow Daily Mail and The Sun and British newspapers. A pedophile, multiple rape convictions, like child rape, 3, 4, 5 years. And a guy who basically says something, puts a little video of a pug doing a Nazi salute online, and that is up to a year in jail. You have got to be kidding me. But what this shows are the priorities of the left. You and I must be aware that this is the agenda that our own domestic leftists want to impose on us. The left, you remember when Obama some time ago said, with this pesky constitution, it just kind of gets in the way of our reorganizing of this great society of ours. And I, of course, immediately threw up a little bit in my mouth because this guy's a constitutional law professor, was at some point. And really? The Constitution's getting in the way? Yeah, good. It's supposed to get in the way of you radically reorganizing the country, which, of course, when you talk about reorganizing the country, the left reorganizing the country, it always involves taking away our rights. And this is a very critical point. To live in a society where we have rights, you have got to tolerate some degree of stupidity. You've got to tolerate some bit of crazy. This is analogous, friends, to living in a neighborhood that is a strict homeowners association neighborhood versus living in a place that has very few rules or no rules at all. If you live in Orange County, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, you know, you've got three shades of stucco that you can choose from. And don't you dare deviate from those three. Now, what do you get? You get a really homogenous sort of, you know, neighborhood and all kind of looks the same. And, you know, some people like that. But the trade-off is you can't have anything exceptional. You're not going to have anything new. The neighborhood, as it was built in 2004, still looks the same way in 2014. and 2018, and will look the same in 2030. Which is why you see, if you ever pass a neighbor and you look at these very same looking houses, you go, why haven't they updated that? Man alive, that neighborhood needs a pick-me-up. Well, there's an answer. They've got CCNRs that regulate all of that. We evolve as a society by having ideas put out there in the public sphere to be discussed. And those ideas sometimes are quite radical and perhaps, careful here, perhaps even a touch offensive. Why summarily quash those ideas? Why? For avoiding your feelings getting hurt? This is insane. But the left does not want new ideas put into the marketplace. They don't. They have their agenda, and their entire objective is to quash dissent. So you want to know what the law is? I'm always fascinated. As an attorney, I'm always fascinated with the actual law. So the hate speech law is grossly offensive. That's the standard. Is something grossly offensive? So I always ask the question, what the hell does that mean? What does grossly offensive mean? And the short answer is grossly offensive means whatever you want it to mean. So it is essentially a very open-ended definition under the law that can be weaponized, right? Can be taken by whatever magistrate is sitting in judgment, whatever government agency is investigating, whatever political power is currently in office. And they can decide what it means. They can decide how to use it. And most importantly, through selective prosecution, they can decide who they pursue under this law and who they don't. This is something our founding fathers saw extremely clearly and presently 200 plus years ago. They saw and understood that we could not be a country, we could not flourish, we could not grow, we could not evolve properly if we were not given a society that was given this fundamental liberty, the liberty to speak freely. And so I worry about Europe tremendously, and I've said this over the years. I think that Great Britain needs to, if it really wants to modernize as a country, liberalize in the classical small L sense of the word liberalize, it must provide protection for speech. But I don't think there's any political will for this. I think right now Europe and Great Britain in particular are countries that have completely devoted themselves to political correctness, multiculturalism, and have capitulated to the victim-mongering political class. And the political class that needs and wants victims, right? The socialist, leftist political agitators, they need victims. They need people who are down and out, who are being persecuted by evil, truly evil YouTube comedians. That's their cause. That becomes their rallying cry. That becomes their mandate. And the rest is history. And we end up in a society where you can't express anything. I think this is extremely dangerous, and I'm obviously going to follow this. They're going to appeal it. The problem is I'm just looking at the law, and it's tough to appeal from. I mean, he was convicted. The law is the law. And if somebody decides it's grossly offensive, they're out. So anyway, one thing he said, the thing that was most worrying is that one of the primary things in any action that is to be considered is things like context and intent. And today, context and intent was completely disregarded. So he's saying, I had a certain context for this joke. See, my point is that his context and intent wasn't disregarded. It was deliberately interpreted in a way by somebody who has a separate agenda. And that's the problem. Alan Dershowitz, this is such a great clip. So he, on Wednesday, in the context of the Mueller probe, Alan Dershowitz, famous attorney and law professor emeritus from Harvard Law School, he was talking with Jeffrey Tubin, and on Anderson Cooper. And I'll play this next segment, but this it was in a different context, but he's defending consistency. The beautiful thing about the way our Constitution is written is that it's so clear and does not put in their language in the Constitution, believe it or not, as much as we argue about what different clauses mean or purport to mean, the Constitution is written very plainly, and we're fortunate for that. And so Dershowitz gives an impassioned plea here, which I really need to share. It's good because you've got to be consistent. And it's very important when it comes to law to keep laws within a very narrow interpretation and construction. Because if you don't do that, then whatever political party comes in can persecute the other out-of-power party and vice versa. That keeps going back and forth. You weaponize a political system. And that basically, at that point, you're no better than Venezuela. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right, Alan Dershowitz was talking to Jeffrey Toobin on CNN's Anderson Cooper show. This was Wednesday. And they were talking about Trump and the Mueller investigation. And Toobin was very keen on getting Dershowitz to eat his words and his positions on Trump, and basically accusing Dershowitz capitulating to Trump or somehow defending Trump unreasonably. And listen to this. I think, and this is coming from a criminal defense attorney, but it's very important also in the free speech context. Listen to how Dershowitz defends himself.
I'm a civil libertarian, criticize the law.
But you are criticizing it in the context of, you know, position after position that is in support of exoneration of Donald Trump over again.
No interest in whether Donald Trump is exonerated or not. If the evidence is against him, I will be the first person to call him out on it. I am asking for non-criminalization of political differences, narrow construction of the criminal law, civil liberties to apply equally to Democrats and Republicans. What you accuse me of is not being partisan. You want me to have a different standard against Donald Trump than I did in relation to the Clintons and with everybody else.
I said
the same thing about Bob Menendez. I said the same thing about everybody who has been prosecuted. I'm saying the same thing about Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. I think there's criminalization of political differences there. I have been utterly and completely consistent and nonpartisan. And Jeffrey, you haven't.
Boom! Sometimes the Constitution runs afoul of something that you want. And my personal approach to this is I tend to trust the Constitution more than I trust my own personal opinions. I think that the men, and yes, back then, I'm sorry, ladies, they were all men. The men that drafted it, signed it, debated it, of course, and put it together, the Constitution and Bill of Rights, there was tremendous wisdom and foresight. And I think that Dershowitz is absolutely right. Laws need to be constructed very narrowly, which basically means you don't want to read things into a law that's not there. Because then what happens? You can misuse different laws based on whoever's in power and making decisions of who to prosecute. And the same is true in this case of this guy, this Meacham guy in Scotland. There they have a law that is unfortunately very difficult to narrowly construct because it's constructed very broadly, right? They can't interpret it narrowly because it's been constructed broadly. It's a giant catch-all. Grossly offensive is the standard. Anything that's grossly offensive. Well, how do you define that? How do you figure that out? And invariably, it's being always decided by the people that are in control, that are in charge, and it's being used just as Dershowitz says, criminalizing political differences, criminalizing the speech and actions of your opponents. By implication, of course, for political gain, to gain political advantage over them and to silence them. Now, if we want a healthy democracy, this kind of stuff is not good. And this is why having a First Amendment and having, in fact, the other components of the Bill of Rights, this is very important. Because these amendments all make an enormous difference to us and our liberties and how we are protected from an abusive government. And by the way, if you think Trump is a terrible guy, and you think that he's basically on his road to becoming our version of Putin, this is great. You should agree with everything that I'm saying. The minute that Trump starts to step out of line and is wants to bowl over the Constitution, you will hear from me first. I promise you that. Okay. Yes. I know. I want to get into this the gun control argument too, because funny enough, speaking of liberties, Second Amendment, right to bear arms. But there's an interesting twist to this. There's a bank out there who is basically making a bunch of businesses conform to its own version of gun control. And this is an interesting twist. I'll see what you guys think of this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on a Friday afternoon, coming to you a little bit earlier this week, and we'll see how this goes. We may do this in subsequent weeks as well. Grateful to have you with us, friends. How are you doing? Guess what I did last night? I went to the Magic Castle for the first time. Bill, you seem like a Magic Castle guy. Have you been? Never. Okay, I don't know how to describe it. I think I'm allowed to talk about it. So the Magic Castle, it's over on Franklin Avenue in Hollywood. It's an old house. It was built in 1909. And then sometime in the 60s, it was bought, by a couple of guys who turned it into a headquarters for the Academy of Magical Arts. And this is the group representing magicians. And I've always heard about this place. I don't know if you've been. It's a must attend. It's a private club. You need to know a member to go and be invited. I am such a skeptical person. Okay, I'm just going to tell you right now. I certainly don't believe in magic, right? Magic is not real. But I also don't think of myself as an idiot, and I have fairly decent vision. And they do these tricks in front of you. They take you into, there's a small rooms. It's not just on a big stage. There's a bunch of different magic shows going on all over the place in this old mansion. And these little rooms, there's these up close magic tricks, and the guy literally will tell you, okay, I'm gonna have a coin come out of my hand right now. I mean, it's gonna happen, and all of a sudden a silver dollar materializes, and I'm looking at his hand. I'm sitting 3.5 feet away from his hand. At an angle, I'm looking at an angle, and there's people from other angles, and no one can figure out where the heck that coin came from. And I went with a couple of my attorney colleagues, so attorneys, by virtue of who they are and what they do, their job is to call out BS. They're supposed to be able to figure out when somebody's fooling them. I feel like I spent an entire night of people fooling me over and over and over again. And I just took it like a little girl. I mean, I just took it there like it was nuts. We were all so mad. Robbie, you know who I went with. Went with Clark, Ashley, and another colleague of ours. But it was, we were, and there was a trick. I don't, is this interesting at all? There's this trick where he has these cards out, and then he says, draw a picture on the back of your, just so I can't see it, draw a picture. And there's five people, and they all draw a picture. And he's able, he pulls up the first one, shows the picture, happened to be mine, and says, who drew this picture? Me. And he picked me. All right, you got it. I drew that picture. And then he picks the next three people, right, down to the fifth. And he's like, now I know you, points to the girl, says, I know you. This, of course, this is your card, right? Then he like one-ups it, and he is able to somewhat recreate the, but he doesn't look at the card. He hasn't looked, he hasn't picked up the cards, nothing. He takes another card and draws the same picture that she drew on the card. How did he do that? So that was my night. All right. Citibank is requiring gun store customers to quit selling high-capacity magazines. Now, by gun store customers, these are gun stores, right? Sellers and resellers of guns who are clients of Citibank. Now, this could mean, for one, a store that has an account at Citibank. It more commonly will apply to anyone who does their credit card processing through Citibank. This will not apply to individual customers who go in and use their Citibank cards. So Citibank is putting in some rules. I'm going to share those with you when we come back. I'll tell you, I have some thoughts on this. Interesting stuff. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. And we're here on the Sam Nation Radio Network back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right, Citibank is requiring gun store customers to stop selling high-capacity magazines. Actually, more than that. This is Citibank asking gun stores who they do credit card processing for, or also commercial banking. They want to follow their, they're telling them, we won't let you use our bank if you don't adhere to these best practices, including not selling firearms to someone who haven't passed a background check, restricting the sale of firearms for individuals under 21 years of age. And also, you can't sell bump stocks or high capacity magazines. So these are additional higher restrictions than are placed by current federal law. And it's being talked about because it's part of the gun control argument. But I just want to explain something here. Citibank is a private company. And they absolutely can decide freely who they do business with and who they don't do business with. They also don't have a monopoly on the market. I mean, there's other banks that a gun store that doesn't want to adhere to these rules can use. So Citibank right now, the decision that they're making is they have chosen virtue signaling, right? Because I know what a gun store owner is like. Trust me, gun store owners, for the most part, unless we're talking about the big retailers, the big chains, independent mom and pop gun stores in places like Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, are going to see this and say, oh, looks like we got a Citibank account. Screw them. Guess who's going to drop Citibank before Citibank even has a chance to enforce their policy? The gun store owner, absolutely. They're done. They're out of there. And so if Citibank has decided they're fine losing a certain small fraction of their total business, that's a good trade-off, okay? It's a good trade-off against, you know, what do they gain? They get some press. So look, Citibank cares. They care. But it's totally meaningless. And in that sense, what they're doing here is the same thing as what all these proposals are, the calls for government action on the same issue. Because I don't want to relitigate it, but these are meaningless changes. Well, I understand this guy was 18, bought a rifle at 18. And if you raised it to 21, he would not have had a rifle. Well, that's a big assumption. Couldn't have bought it somewhere. Couldn't have stolen it. Couldn't have borrowed one from a friend. These are all big suppositions. And so I think this is, a whole lot of nothing. But it got some play this week. You know who continues to get play? Almost unbelievably, David Hogg, and he's the Parkland survivor, probably the face now of the Kids for Gun Control movement. And he was on an Axios event on gun control today, and he was asked by Mike Allen, after he's talking about all the activism that he's engaged in. And I thought about this myself. Like, you got this kid. I remember being really busy in high school. You know, I had a job. And I was trying to keep, you know, my lousy 3.7 GPA afloat. And I was I competed against people who had like 4.3 to 4.5 GPAs with all their crazy AP classes. So, you know, I was busy. And this guy is on TV all the freaking time. So how's he doing it? So this is what Alan is asking him. Listen to this.
How do you do all this and make sure you graduate?
Good question. talking to my teachers and trying to work it out day by day. I was supposed to do a math test yesterday, and I was like, nah. But it works out. My teacher's very understanding.
And what should the school be doing for you that they're not?
I think what the school should be doing, not only for me, but for everybody, is simply ensuring that everybody has an equal chance. In my AP classes, our school, as I've said, is 25% black, for example. And in my AP classes, there's about one black student for every 30 students. It's disgusting.
Oh, we're having all sorts of other social commentary. I'm going to address this right after the break. This is so telling. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Okay, so David Hogg talking with Mike Allen of Axios, you just heard the clip a minute ago, gets asked by Allen, well, dude, how do you do all of this TV media appearance nonsense? And make sure that you graduate. And Hogg says, well, good question. My teachers are very understanding. And then he said, well, what ought the school be doing? He's getting that asked by Mike Allen. And Hogg says, yeah, I think what the school should be doing, not only for me, but for everybody, is simply ensuring that anybody has an equal chance. And he talks about his AP classes. You know, in an AP class, advanced placement, you get college credit, generally speaking, for the class if you pass the AP exam at the end of the year. It's very selective. He says, in my AP classes, our school, as I've said, is 25% black. In my AP classes, there's one black student for about every 30 students. And then Hogg says, it's disgusting. What have I said about him from day one? He is getting attention because he was there in the building when his friends and acquaintances were getting shot. It's part of the debate. It's a legitimate part of the debate. But like any person off the street, any person randomly chosen simply for their proximity to an occurrence, he's got an opinion. And the opinions that he has, forget the opinions. Actually, there's biases, right? There are orientations at play. This guy's a total committed leftist. He thinks it's disgusting that there's one black student for every 30 students in class. I mean, do we have to really get into this? Do we have to explain to him why that happens? Oh, it might be sad. What is disgusting? Disgusting implies that those students are getting discriminated against, right? That it's the school that's keeping them out of a selective class. Well, you listen to this program, you understand that there's so much more at play in that equation. But this is the type of person that we're dealing with. You're finally seeing his opinions on other subjects, right? Now it's coming out. He's talking about other things, not just gun control. And it is, the more this guy says, the more ridiculous, I'll tell you, the more ridiculous he sounds. So, all right, there it is. Another show in the bag. It's been fantastic. Friends, I'm so happy to have you here with us. And it's really enjoyable. And I'm glad. I like this Friday afternoon thing. I think this is going to work out nicely. So I have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy time off if you are not working. If you are working, hang in there. But enjoy time with family and friends. It's really what matters in life. All right. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, over and out. Soldiers, keep on.